Our main speaker tonight is Roy.
Hi, everybody. I must be an alcoholic because I'm halfway through the meeting and my bottle's almost done. My name's Roy, and I'm sober today. I have not had a drink since the 22nd of April of 1990. And for that, I'm grateful. And so are people, and at least speak into the mic. Okay, here we go. Is that better? Okay, can you lower this a little bit because I'm feeling like kind of constricted? That's better. Thank you. So my name's Roy. I'm an alcoholic. I've not had a drink since the 22nd of April of 1990, and I'm grateful for that. And my home group is the Baldwin Group of Long Island, but as you've probably figured out from my accent by now, that's not where I'm from. Welcome to all the overseas visitors, and I got sober in Bombay, India, and that's where I did most of my drinking. Here we go. Just before I came in here, someone was asking me if I was from Turkey. And I said, no, I'm not Turkey, but right now I'm chicken. Well, thank God we're not a glum lot, because it would be really difficult with you guys. So I grew up in a fairly middle-class family in Bombay, India. My parents were both dental surgeons, and alcohol was just par for the course. My family entertained a lot. My dad graduated from the University of Liverpool. Yes, I'm a Reds fan, to our friend from London. And my mom graduated from NYU, and then they both went back to India to practice dentistry. So every Saturday night, they would entertain. And my recollection of their entertainment was this whole bunch of dentists and doctors would show up, and they'd have a couple of drinks. They'd be singing around the piano. They'd be dancing. They'd have dinner and dessert, and then they'd go home. And it wasn't even 11 o'clock. And this wasn't like the parties I went to. There were no fisticuffs. There was no vomiting. Nobody went home with the wrong spouse. Everybody knew exactly where they had parked their cars. And, but the reason I bring this up is because my grandmother would make this batch of homemade wine for us kids. And, it was probably 99% grape juice, but we would just be given a glass of wine. No big deal. We'd be given a glass of wine on days and occasions of national importance. Now, my father's side of the family was Catholic. My mother's side of the family was Hindu. And between those two religious calendars, we had more holidays than an Irish calendar. So there were plenty of days and occasions for drinking. Not either... My grandmother had this brother who would show up at parties. And this guy... He was really interesting bloke. He'd come to the back room where we kids were hanging out, and he'd tell us these incredible stories of how he almost crashed his motorbike and how he almost lost his job and how he talked his way out of a fast one. And he always had this little bag over his shoulder, and ever so often he'd raise the bag to his shoulder, there'd be the sloping sound, and then he'd be all happy and jolly again. And then he'd give us money to go to the store and get him things like peanuts or cigarettes or whatever people who drink do. And he was like us. He was one of those keep the change kind of fellas. So he could never remember whether he gave us $5 or $50. And I quickly figured this out, and I realized that if I loitered at the store long enough, he would forget that he gave me money and give me money again. So clearly I started on my criminal career long before my alcoholic career. But the reason I bring up this uncle is because he could be counted on to do something spectacular. He'd take a header into the cake. He'd break a bottle of my dad's best scotch. He'd feed the entree to the dogs or something like that. And then we wouldn't see him again for a month of Sundays. But he was kind and he was loving. And he was generous, and he was patient, and he had time for us kids, and he told the best stories. So I wanted to be like him when I grew up. Needless to say, I got my wish. Unfortunately for him, he didn't make it into AA. He was riding. We had a lot in common. We both rode motorcycles. I know I don't look like a biker now, but I assure you I have a two-wheeler in my garage in Long Island. It's got pedals, no motor. And he rode bikes. He worked at the airport. So did I. But he didn't make it into AA. He crashed his bike coming home one night and then died. I can still remember my cousin Neil and I snuck back to the cemetery after the funeral to empty a bottle of booze on his grave, which he made us promise to do. And even back then, I was thinking, what a waste of good hooch. Anyway, so that was my introduction to alcohol and what I now know is alcoholism. So when I finished school, and as soon as we got into double digits, we got graduated from my grandmother's homemade wine to this nasty concoction the British left behind, thank you, Mr. London, called Shandy. So apparently, if you take 2 inches of beer and you top up the glass with lemonade or ginger ale, it's okay to give to kids. And I can clearly remember, you know that line from Bill's story where he says, I had arrived? I had this clear recollection of being maybe 11 years old, sitting on the front porch with my dad on a Sunday morning, and he's drinking a glass of beer, and I'm drinking a glass of Shandy. They're both the same color with beer, with bubbles and stuff like that. But that was my introduction to alcohol and alcoholism. I finished school, and the day after I finished high school, the three of us decided to go out hiking. I was a Boy Scout. We had a lot of mountains around Bombay where I grew up. I don't know whose idea it was, but someone decided, now that we're real men, let's go and get some of the real thing. Not Coca-Cola. And we were definitely interested. You don't need ID to buy anything in India. In fact, you don't need ID to do anything in India. So we went to the liquor store and we picked up 2 bottles of beer. And by the time we got to the top of this mountain, of course, none of us budding Einsteins had brought an opener along because we weren't planning on going drinking. But we were Boy Scouts, so after fiddling around with sticks and stones, we got the bottle open. And, you know, by dint of my carrying the bottles up the mountain, I got the first swig. And for a kid who's only drunk his grandmother's homemade sweet wine and this lemonade-infected beer, I'm raising my bottle, this bottle to my mouth and saying, oh my God, this thing smells like vomit. You know? And then I took a swig and it tasted even worse going down. And in my mind, I'm thinking, what on earth do grown-ups find in this vile concoction? But being a real man, I said, wow, this is great. And I passed it to the next guy. I guess they were as big liars as I was because they pretended to like it too. And when that bottle got back to me, bam, it had hit me. I experienced a sense of ease and comfort that I had never experienced before with my grandmother's wine or the Shandy. And I said, wow, this is great. Those 2 bottles were gone in no time flat. And I volunteered to climb back down the mountain and get some more. I was not monkeying around with beer. I came back with a bottle of rum. And that's about all I remember of that weekend. I can only tell you from the evidence that went home with me that there must definitely have been some fighting because I was bruised. One of my shirts had got burnt in the campfire. There was definitely some vomiting because some of the dried evidence had gone home in my sleeping bag. I can only hope it was mine. But that's not the bad part. One of those 2 guys is still not talking to me. What's even worse is the other guy won't tell me why. And that was December 1977. So that's one blackout. I'm not in a hurry to have catch up with me. So, back from my first heroic weekend of destructive drinking. And look, when you're in India and you're a kid, you don't have any rights. The people that are paying the bills decide what you're going to do with your life. So my parents, being dental surgeons, decided that I was going to be a dental surgeon. I had no desire to spend the rest of my life looking into people's mouths. I can think of 1 or 2 more interesting things to do with people's mouths, and looking into them was not... I'm so glad I'm at the right meeting. Phew! We're not a glum lot, I'm telling you. So off I went to college, and within the first week I met people like me. And we would spend Monday to Thursday planning what we were going to do from Thursday to Sunday. Because as any alcoholic knows, weekend starts on Thursday. And we would spend Thursday to Sunday putting whatever would go into our system. Wasn't always only alcohol. And apparently I could drink the most, drive the straightest, tell the most believable yarns. So I was always selected to drop people home and explain away their antics to their parents. Every Monday morning was the same. We'd get together on the basketball court, and by piecing together everyone's blackouts, we would figure out what happened over the weekend. So, you know, college was fantastic. I recommend it to anyone. It was a great experience. I never actually graduated, but it was still great nevertheless. So it took me 3 years to get through 1 year of college, and eventually, Father Mosquito called me in, fine Jesuit institution, and he said, St. Xavier's College has been around for 125 years. I think we'll manage without your contribution. And they booted me out. Man, what a resentment I copped. So I started working full-time. I started working in the airlines. And the first thing that changed was my drinking. You know, Courtney was talking about a little earlier. I don't know on what date or on what occasion. Two drinks or three drinks wasn't cutting it. Two drinks or three drinks just got the evening started. And then I'd be all relaxed and, you know, and then do all kinds of other nefarious activities. And then the second thing that changed was finances, because now I'm drinking every day, so I have less money in the pocket, and I'm trying to figure out how to make ends meet. And then the third thing that changed was my relationship, because at that time I was engaged to be married to my high school sweetheart. And I don't know how it is in the USA, but in India you're kind of occasionally expected to show up with flowers and chocolate and take her out to dinner. And when she says, when are we getting married, honey, you don't say next year, honey, for 10 years in a row. So we'd have plenty of fights, and that's when I discovered these two fantastic properties that alcohol had. The first was temporary deafness. I could see her mouth moving, I couldn't hear anything. And the second was temporary amnesia, because the next morning I didn't remember. You should have made me write it down. So the next thing that got affected was work. So now we've been through drinking and finances and relationship. And look, you know, when you show up hungover every day, bosses don't like that. They start giving you love letters called memos, you know, and they start encouraging you to work for the opposition. I'd show up at Bombay Airport and I'd grab a chart and I'd be walking from one end of Bombay Airport to the other, pretending to look for a lost bag or a lost cow or a lost child or something. You know, and if public amends, if anyone's ever lost a bag, it was probably me. Because when you're hungover and the bag's coming down the belt, you don't know whether it's saying Vancouver or Vladivostok. So you just put it on a belt to Addis Ababa and hope that it gets there. So the airline industry and me were not too friendly after all this. I'm about to give my own opinion. It's my experience, but also my opinion. When I travel now, I only take carry-on. Who needs clothes anyway on a vacation? So one night I was playing pool with one of my buddies. And he said, what are you doing wasting your time in the airlines? Come and work for me. He made film and television. I said, sounds like a great idea. So 2 o'clock in the morning, I called my boss. I told him where he could shove his job and what a great loss this was for the airline industry. Next day, I showed up at my friend's place. He said, what are you doing here? So you hired me last night. So I got into the airline business, and that was the beginning of the end. And about a year later, I had a horrendous motorcycle accident. It really wasn't my fault. I was going straight and the road turned right. Like any self-respecting biker, I had my helmet on the headlamp. So 7 days later, I woke up with 36 stitches in my head, my back in a brace, my neck in a collar. Not remember what happened. I don't know. There was a cow crossing the road. They took me back to that village later on. There are no cows in that village. Plenty of people, plenty of pigs, but no cows. I was feeling really, when I woke up, full of shame and guilt and remorse. And I was really restless because I didn't know what was wrong. I knew what would fix it. So I took a discharge against medical advice. So all of a sudden, I became Mahatma Gandhi. Plenty of people dying on the streets. Put them in hospital. Crossed the road. Had a couple of drinks. Rented another motorcycle. I didn't need a headlamp. I didn't need a helmet this time. And back to the film unit I was at. And towards the end of my drinking, it was the same every time. Wake up every morning, ears first. And by trying to figure out from the sounds in the next room or the lack of sounds, how I came home the night before. And then get reconnected with God. Ah, quick interjection here. So like I said, my parents were from two different religions. So depending which grandmother I spent the weekend with, I would be assured that the other half was the wrong kind and going to a warm place. Oh my God. So all those Catholic cousins are going to hell? Yeah, but all those Hindu cousins are going to hell. So God and I parted company right there, except in the morning when I didn't know what was waiting in the next room. Cold, appalling silence. People waiting to question you. Run for the door. Let there be money in my wallet. Never money. Pieces of paper, IOUs, job offers, number of some unfortunate woman had taken hostage. No idea. Run. And then swear I'm never going to do this again. On good days, I'll manage till about 11 o'clock and then try it all over again. That's really what it used to be like. What happened was Alcoholics Anonymous. I first got the message when I was 18. I was reading a book called The Second Deadly Sin. And it was about a New York City detective that was in AA and chasing an ice pick killer. And I said, wow, there's a place called AA for all my drunken friends. And I just stored that away. When I was 22, my grandmother was coming home from church, 6 in the morning, and I was there having my third rum and water. She said, what are you, an alcoholic? You better go and meet Uncle Tony and his friends who don't drink. Listen, when you're 22, you don't want to meet Uncle Tony and his friends who don't drink. You want to hang out with your friends who do drink. But if you love your grandmother as much as I do, you have a few drinks and you go. And I was at my first meeting at age 22. I have no idea what they were saying. But I quickly figured out there were two kinds of people at the meeting. There were those that gave directions and those that gave suggestions. I don't even take directions from GPS. It's usually wrong. So of course I went with the suggestors and I heard some really valuable stuff for 6 years. Never kept me sober, but it was really great. Put the plug in the jug. It came out every Monday. Take the time to think things through. Who's got time to think all that, man? Keep coming back. It works if you work it. What's it? I don't know, but if you work it, it will work. It works. It really is. What's it? They said, that's it. So I took a look at that being, oh, powerless? I don't think so. Unmanageable? You got to be kidding. Oh, step 2 as God? I don't need that. And you guys are insane. Step 3 as God? I don't need that. Step 4, there's nothing wrong with me, so I don't need that. Step 5, I don't believe in God and no way I'm telling you guys anything about me. That's out. Step 6 and 7, I got no shortcomings, so that's out. Step 8, you guys need some help with that. I have a long list of people I would like to harm. And step 9, I have a longer list of people that owe me amends. Nothing wrong with me, so 10 is out. 11 as God, so that is out. 12, I'm doing 12. You're saying keep coming back and meeting makers and making things. And so I did all that stuff. I said, whatever you're telling me is not working because I'm still drinking. And they said, well, you know, some of us are sicker than others. I said, now you're telling me this after 6 years? Why are you sicker than others? They said, because we have secrets and those secrets take. I said, I had my last drink on the 22nd of April. Coincidentally, it was on a mountain. I was 3 weeks sober in AA. I was too ashamed to tell my friends that I was 3 weeks sober in AA. So I said, what do you got? There are two shots of whiskey and I finished a bottle of wine. And the next day, walking down the mountain, I kept asking myself, why did you pick up? And from deep down within me came that answer. I picked up because I did not have the mental power to say no. The page 44 question someone asked before. And I kept drinking because I didn't have the physical power to stop. I rushed back to the meeting that night and I met this guy, Franco, whom I'd never heard before. He was 16 years sober and only 36 years old. And I said, will you sponsor me? He said, why? I said, what do you mean, why? Aren't you supposed to say yes? He said, absolutely not. He said, I'm supposed to qualify you. So he proceeded to qualify me through page 91, 92, and 94 of the big book. Do you want to stop for good? No, 90 days, one day at a time, nonsense. I said, yeah, for good. I'm sick of living the way I am. He said, good. Where are you working? And I'm unemployed. Oh, what does your girlfriend say? I'm single again. All right, so what are you doing? Living off your savings? I got about $3 American in the bank. Oh my God, where you live? My grandmother lets me sleep on the couch at night. Your life's unmanageable. You've taken step one. Do you believe in God? I said, no. He said, I'm really sorry. I can't sponsor you. I said, what do you mean? He said, AA is about two things. It's about God and it's about booze. The booze will kill you and God will save you. So if you're not willing to believe in God, I can't sponsor you. I said, I never said I'm not willing. Oh, you're willing? Great. You've taken step two. He said, will you do anything I ask you to do? I said, yes. He said, great. You've taken step three. Kneel down. So what do you mean, kneel down? And the guy hit his knees. Now the meeting was over. I felt embarrassed for the poor fellow, so I knelt down. And he said, repeat after me. If there is a God, if there is a God, please keep me sober today. I said that. And he said, get up. He said, when you get home, you say, if you're still sober, you say, if there's a God, thank you. I said, how long do I have to keep up this malarkey? He said, till you drink again or till you come to believe. One of the two. And I had no idea he was doing page 46 and 47 of the big book with me, helping me form my own concept of God as I understood or misunderstood him. I said, now what? He said, now you start writing. And we crossed the road. I had maybe one day back or less than a day back. He bought me a 200-page notebook and I started writing my fourth step. Now, I'm not like you guys who hurry up and finish your step in 4 or 5 days. I would goof off from Monday to Saturday. Saturday night, desperately do some writing because I had to meet him the next day. There were no big books in India when I got sober. We had 100 big books in the whole country. So if you wanted to read the big book, you came early to the meeting. You bribed the secretary by setting it up. And then he would let you read the book and copy out parts that you wanted. Today I have the luxury of deciding which meeting to not go for depending on what coffee they're not serving. Isn't it great? Love it. So it took me 3 or 4 months. I finished my fourth step. He came over to my house and old style AA. He sat on one end of my living room reading my fourth step. I was saying, why did I write so much? And he was making faces and sounds. Oh my God. And he was making notes. And when he was done, he said, what else? I said, nothing else. He said, what about all that sexual stuff and criminal stuff you didn't write down? I said, like what? And he shared his stuff. I said, oh my God. I went into that fourth step thinking I was like Don Juan. I wound up looking like Elmer Fudd by the time I listened to him. So I shared my stuff and he said, now we can get rid of this, and we burnt my fourth step. And then he handed me this piece of paper. On one side was a list of defects of character he'd picked out. On the other side was the amends I had to make. We did the seventh step. He came with me the next day to supervise my first amend. It was to the film company. I owed them $18,000 between the motorbike, the hotel, the airfare, the hospital, the bar bills, the other entertainment bills. And never take your sponsor with you. I went. I made my amends. They said, see the accountant on the way out. The guy handed me a check for $7,000. I said, what's this? He said, well, you know what? He set up everything. We didn't have to hire an assistant. We shot the whole TV series. I said, that's great. Check was in my hands for about 12 seconds. He said, good, we can use this for your amends. About a month or two after that, I had a spiritual incident and I dropped the word if and I came to believe that there is a God. I'm still not sure who God is or how God is or what God is, but there is a God. Of that I am sure. Step 12. Oh, I got my job back in the film business. And when I was about 3 years sober, we went around the country in India. We were doing a project for UNICEF. In 1993, cell phones hadn't reached India. There was no internet. So I passed through 2 towns that had an AA meeting in those 6 months. How did I stay sober? I had my big book with me. Every night I wrote a letter to someone in AA. That was my meeting. Because part of my job was to buy enough booze for the crew to drink and other stuff, drag the bodies off to bed and wake them up the next morning. And I took a whole bunch of literature. Every meeting that I went, every village we stopped in, I would just be randomly walking around 12-stepping people, whether they were alcoholic or not, to be telling them my story. I stayed sober. 2 years, at that time, I almost died. I had a spiritual awakening. I decided to quit my profession, move to the United States to pursue some professional courses in working with people like us. Turned it over. God has a sense of humor. He sent me to an Islamic country where there was no AA. So I'd go to the next country once a week for a meeting. Then another guy moved into my country. And the two of us followed the directions in chapter 7, and we started the first meeting there. And Mark and I started the first meeting in Sharjah, United Arab Emirates, in 1996. It's still going strong. We'd call the U.S. Embassy every week and drive them crazy. Any American warships in town? Sir, that's classified information. You don't understand. There's sailors on that ship that need a meeting. Still classified. So we would talk to the taxi drivers and to the entertainers of the night. And Mark and I would go down to the docks with this big sign, any friends of Bill W. on board? And we'd pick up some guys, and these poor chumps would think they're going for a meeting, not realizing the two of us were the meeting. I was sharing the story at the Hicksville group maybe about 10 or 15 years ago, and at the end of the meeting, a guy came up to me, tears rolling down his face. He said, I'm one of those guys you picked up in 96, and now I have 5 years. I mean, my hair's standing now. What are the odds? That is God. Some Indian guy from Bombay meets some American guy from Indiana, to the young lady who was from Indiana, on in some port in the Middle East, and then you bump into him in Hicksville, Long Island. It's got to be a God. You know, I moved over here. I went to school. I met a young lady in recovery. We met on a bus going to Dr. Bob's house. She had got sober in Mexico. I had got sober in India. So, of course, we thought it was a great idea to get married, and we did. So we have a 14-year-old son who's never seen either of us drink. Now we're getting divorced. What do you mean, oh? That's life on life's terms. This is the stuff that happens. But don't worry, we both have higher powers. They're called lawyers. So, I do the same things now that I've been doing for the last almost 26 years, if I make it till April 22nd. I wake up in the morning, and between the bedroom and the bathroom, I say, God, please keep me sober today. By saying that, I'm admitting that I'm as powerless today as I was almost 26 years ago. You want proof? Every time that stupid Corona commercial comes on, I salivate. And by saying, God, please keep me sober, that's step two. I'm so insane that I actually salivate for a moment over the stupid commercial. There better be a higher power that's going to keep me sober. While I'm in the shower, I do my own version of step 3 and 7. You know, take away the traffic on the belt, and mortgage, and the divorce, and so on and so forth. Take away my defects, they just make other people miserable, you know. And then I don't recommend this, but, you know, while I'm driving from Long Island on the Belt Parkway, I do my 11th step, you know, on awakening. I consider my plans for the day. Okay, I got to do this, I got to write that, I got to call now, I got to text Jackie, whatever my plans may be. And then I ask God to give me the strength to carry those out. And then thank God for technology, because at work today, you know, you can text somebody and do a quick 10th step. Now, the place I work at, more than 50% of the people are in recovery. How do I know when my day's not going well? And I'm the director. Somebody will walk past my office saying, wow, somebody needs to take an inventory. Or someone will walk past my office and say, wow, someone needs to make an amends to somebody. And I go to the bathroom, do a quick 10th step, and then text somebody and make... And when I get home at night, I close out the day with the 11th step. What was my day like? Where did I go wrong? What could I have done better? And the 12th step, whenever I get an opportunity to do so, I do. I want to thank you, Americans, because when you figured out how to do this, you didn't keep it to yourself. You put it in a book and you sent it all over the world. The figures just blow my mind. 186 countries, 67 languages, 125,000 meetings, 2.2 million people right now doing what we're doing, sitting at an AA meeting, listening to somebody share their experience, strength, and hope. You know, I want to thank Nai for asking me to speak, and I want to end with a prayer that we use in India, which goes, God, bless all the alcoholics wherever they may be. Bless those that are sober today. Give grace to those that are on the way. But please show compassion and mercy to those that may never come. Thank you for my sobriety.
Thank you.